Hello and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Sider, joined by a very special co-host, as we always do today, Brennan Clean. We are right for Brightside, so we also are the co-host of Locked On Suns. Go ahead and give us a follow at Locked On PHX on the Twitter. It would be very much appreciated. But today we're going to be going into more of our draft coverage, Brennan. I know the Suns won last night, but they're still in the top three odds. They're tied for the best odd at Zion Williamson, but we're going to go through our top 10 prospects with March Madness winding down and the Final Four starting up on Saturday. I'll throw it your way first, Brent, just before we dive into what's your overall rank on these prospects in the 2018 class? Because I think for me, after watching this year and really a little bit in 2016 or 2017 as well, I think this is probably the worst out of those three classes.
Yeah, I think it's definitely all year we've kind of known that it's not as heavy on the star talent, and not even just – obviously, a lot of the guys in every draft class that we think could end up being stars never get there for whatever reason. Their team doesn't get that out of them, or they kind of their freshman season looks like a fluke. Whatever it ends up being, that's always true. But this year, it doesn't even look like there's a lot of players who have a ceiling of becoming, you know, all NBA type talents. So that's a little bit disappointing, especially because a lot of bad teams kind of materialize this year that aren't normally in that conversation. So, you know, Washington, Memphis, Dallas, if it was a deep draft, it'd be kind of exciting to see what kind of talent they might be able to add. On the other hand, though, we know the Suns have the top pick, a pretty nice chance at it, better as good as anyone. So from a Suns perspective, you know, they're in the running to really get the diamond of their eye, or whatever, the apple of their eye, in Zion Williamson. But anyone kind of in that 2 to 8 range is going to be pretty disappointed, because it's not as stacked with secondary guys as you'd hope. But I think watching more and more, there's still plenty of solid talent. I think you're going to get a lot of guys who are starters for a long time, with maybe the potential to become all-stars in a couple season all-stars and make a career for themselves. So I'm excited to really dive in as the combine gets started and everything, because I think this class, you kind of have to pay a little more attention, but there's plenty to get excited about.
Yeah, for sure. I think really outside of the five or top six prospects kind of dips a little bit, but I guarantee we'll talk about it a little later in the podcast. But I know some people want to talk about John Moran versus Zion Williamson. We touched on that a few times during the podcast, but you guys will know later on why we're so much higher on Zion Williamson than John Moran. But let's dive right into it, Brian, with our big boards here. I guess I'll start off here with, you want to do just go 10 through 1, or how do you want to do it?
Yeah, let's start at the end and go down. So you start with 10 here.
All right, cool. I'll start with number 10. And for me, it's going to be Nasir Little out of North Carolina, who originally, if you guys have been following along my big boards on Brightside, so I'm going to release the lottery big board 3.0 later this week. And 2.0, Nasir Little was actually number 4 overall on my board. I was super high on him in the preseason, but he's been not good this year. He declared for the draft actually this week. So I think Nasir Little comes at number 10 for me. Just, I haven't really been impressed by him, and I think he's going to be a guy who has to go to the per situation, because I'm really worried that he's kind of a guy who might not really bank well if he's not in a good situation.
Yeah, I think we saw that this year, where he wasn't able to just kind of go out there and do whatever he wanted to do. He had to play within a structure, and it's a structure that ideally would have made sense for him. You know, North Carolina plays really fast. They had a lot of exciting playmakers on the team this year, plenty of spacing. You would think he would have been pretty solid, but just never really got going. Roy Williams didn't trust him with the ball in his hands. He never got into that starting lineup. So I actually have him outside of my top 10. But my number 10, after a pretty awesome weekend for him this past weekend in the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, is PJ Washington. Not a guy that I think fits perfectly with what I was saying about my thoughts on the class in general. Just not somebody who I would imagine is ever going to be an all-NBA player. Not somebody who is going to go get you a 20 and 10 even, but I think just a solid starter, somebody you can trust to do a pretty wide variety of things. We saw him. I think he's going to be a good spot up 3-point corner shooter. I think, you know, you can get that from him. So that helps as far as playing the four in the NBA. And then anyone who watched this weekend knows what he can get buckets in the post at will. Smart player, at 6'8", you know, going to be able to defend at least 3, 4, and 5 probably in the NBA. So just wide variety of skills, and I was really impressed with him.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think I have PJ Washington actually ranked outside my top 15 right now. I have him at 16, but I have Tyler Herro of Kentucky ahead of him, who's actually number 11 on my board. But we can bounce back here to number 9 here for my prospect. That's Jackson Hayes of Texas, who I pulled the trigger finally. I moved him ahead of Bol Bol after some little just debating back and forth, because I think Bol Bol has super high upside, but just the injury risk, I think, is going to drop down some boards. And Jackson Hayes, who won't be a fit in Phoenix, they already had DeAndre Ayton, but a guy who's risen up 7-8 spots on my board from the last update, like the next guy on the list as well. But Jackson Hayes just kind of reminds me of, like, not like a Clint Capella type, so to say, but just like that archetype of rolling big man who's going to be protecting the rim, maybe like a Jared Allen type.
Yeah, it's funny. Jared Allen is exactly who he reminds me of, which, of course, is basically just the 2 years ago version of Jackson Hayes, went to Texas as well. But they both just play kind of methodical. They just move around the inside really intelligently. And I think, you know, ideally he's kind of a Rudy Gobert type. He's so long and so big, not going to be 7'2" like Gobert, but still has that just ability to get in the way of everything when he's out there. And I think that's, you know, product of his footwork and his smarts, because he's not an incredible athlete, which is why, you know, he probably won't be as solid as a finisher and rebounder as Clint Capella, but in that mold for sure. He's a little higher on my board, but my number 9 is Darius Garland, who he is a lot higher for most people. And I get that, you know, a point guard who can pull up from three like he can, make plays as a scorer. He has a great first step, just really smooth handle, a perfect point guard scorer, but had more turnovers and assists in the five or six games he played this season. And injury, not anything I'm too worried about, but all that kind of knocks him down just a little bit for me. He's in the 4-5 range on most, you know, ESPN, you know, The Athletic type boards right now.
Let me ask you this, because I have Darius Garland ranked a few spots ahead, who we'll get into in a few minutes here, but just, do you think if Darius Garland would have played a full season, there would have been a debate between him and John Morant or not?
If he played the full season? Yeah, I think so for sure, because we never got to see him in conference play. So we never got to see him in, now looking back on how the tournament unfolded and how many SEC teams played really, really well in March, that would have been an awesome scouting opportunity. And I think we would have seen him get better as the season went along for sure.
Yeah, I think maybe if he would have played the whole season, might have been a top 5 pick. I know some
people, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he's healthy enough to do workouts and maybe go to the combine. Who knows? It wouldn't blow me away if he got picked above Morant. I mean, I don't know. Things happen when those guys get in the team's buildings. And, you know, we've seen rises and falls much stranger than that.
Yeah, maybe he's like the new SGA, where he was like, I think, top 15. They went top 5 buzz like a day before the draft, and ended up going number 10 overall. But he could be just like SGA, but as far as just stock goes. But for my number 8, I'm going to go with Brandon Clark of Gonzaga, who rose 8 spots in my last update too, from 16 to 8. And he's the guy who's super impressed with me. I know on your Suns-specific big board, not overall talent big board, you had Brandon Clark number 3, and I agree with you there. I think that if the Suns finish number 3 in the draft, in the lottery, I think maybe this would be an opportunity for them to move back, get an asset. If they want to stay in the draft, that's a big F. But if they want to stay in the draft, move back a few spots and get maybe the 5 or 6 or 7 pick in the draft and get Brandon Clark and get another asset in the process, it makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, that was the trade that you posited in our mock draft a few weeks ago that we did at the end of an episode. And I think it makes a lot of sense. I think Clark is, it's funny, and I mentioned this in that story, which people should definitely go read. It's what we're doing here, but specifically from the Suns' point of view, keeping in mind the weirdness with the scouting rumors about this team, what needs they have positionally, what types of players they tend to target, all that type of stuff I tried to involve in my thinking there. It's called If I Ran the World. So just search that if you want to read that perspective on it, because it's vastly different from what we're talking about here. And I think that's how we kind of need to think about it. But from a talent perspective, Clark's pretty similar to Zion Williamson. It's funny that they're going to be up there together on top of so many advanced stat leaderboards, PER, box plus minus, VORP, all those things. They both shattered those records. And it's just kind of ironic how similar they are as well for that reason. And he's at 8 on my board too. And I'm not exactly positive what position he plays. I think that's going to be the number one question. Can he play the 5 in the NBA? Probably is actually his best position, because he can't really shoot, you know, but he's not big enough where you feel like he's a no doubt center at the NBA level. He's probably going to play a little bit of both. And I think you got to find the right players around him. Fortunately, I think the Suns do have a guy who fits pretty well with him, which is DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And he would be a really exciting fit here. I don't know about the spacing. I think that'd be kind of a question with Clark. But let me ask you this as a Clark comp real quick before we go on number seven on our boards. And do you think he's – I saw a comp for Zana that was like Draymond Green with a rocket up his butt pretty much, which is kind of a fun thing that – it's really pretty realistic too. But do you think Brandon Clark is just a more refined, less athletic version of a – or maybe not less athletic version, but kind of just like how Draymond Green was at Michigan State?
Yeah, probably, you know, there's two things about Draymond that I think make him such a tough comp for anybody. And it's obviously that I think we use that comp for a lot of things because people know what type of player Draymond is and what he opens up for Golden State. So it's easy to say, like, ideally that this guy would be able to do that for his team. Not quite saying that they're ever going to be that level of player because Draymond might be a Hall of Famer when it's all said and done. So I see it, but the two things are just incredible strength and physicality that Draymond plays with that allows him to really be a legit center. It's not a thing where the Warriors are crossing their fingers. He can really hold up there. And the playmaking. I mean, Clark can make plays, but Draymond is a point guard out there, and so that's tough too. But, you know, versatility-wise, the way he can move, his intelligence, I think that is a pretty sound comp. If he's like a, you know, dollar store version of Draymond, I think you got to be pretty happy. Do you want to move on to seven now, or do you want to take a break and then do our next three?
Let's just do seven real quick, because for mine, we already covered number seven for me, and that was Darius Garland, so nothing really much okay. to add on for him. Just we're thinking more about if he played a full season, probably might have had the top five buzz, but a guy can shoot, a guy can pass. Kind of reminds me a little bit of a discount Damian Lillard, just as far as the games that I saw, but he's a guy who could easily be someone who rises, like we had mentioned earlier, in the pre-draft process.
Yeah, definitely a lot like Kemba, Damian, just the guys who can pull up from three and how much that opens up for them. It's such a rare player, and I think that's really going to change a team if he lands, if he even reaches, you know, kind of his baseline, his median outcome. It's going to be a game changer for an offense. So he has that upside for sure. He's my number nine. My number seven, though, is another guy we already talked about, and that's Jackson Hayes. And probably don't need to spend any more time on him considering – there's really no way he ends up in Phoenix, but just a guy that I just feel like there's kind of no way he doesn't play at least as a backup in the NBA. He's just smart, physical, athletic, just a solid player, but yeah, not going to be a Sun.
Yeah. That's going to be interesting just to see between Bol Bol and Jackson Hayes, who has a better career because Bol Bol really shut out early, but Jackson Hayes was consistent throughout the year. Before we go on to our next, going through our next few prospects, I want to tell you guys really quickly about our Locked On NBA Twitter account. If you haven't already done so, go ahead and give us a follow at Locked On NBA Net. It is one more valuable resource out there on NBA Twitter. Brent and I both have our accounts linked up on there for the Locked On Suns coverage you guys love here. But if you guys want to get a more national taste, national scope of what's going on in the NBA with the playoffs coming very soon within the next few weeks, go ahead and give us a follow at Locked On NBA Net. And also before that, I want to tell you to also listen to us on the Himalaya Podcast app, which is a new podcasting app. You can listen to us on there. It's very easy to use, very accessible. So go ahead and give us a listen over at the Himalaya Podcast app as well.
And I don't know if you guys know, but I'm sure Evan and I have said it plenty. We're both ready to graduate here, and I've started to send out job applications, just kind of testing the market. My lease is expiring on my apartment here in June and July, and it's overwhelming. I mean, anyone who's had to make that change, whether that's right out of college or you get laid off or you have a couple kids, whatever it is, the change in not only your life, but what you have to do to support the family, support yourself, is pretty intimidating a lot of the time. And a lot of that comes down to buying or selling a home. And you've been hearing me tell you about Homey for quite a while, but I think that's what it dials down to, is how much they can relieve the stress on you. It's not only a matter of saving you a ton of money or providing you a team of realtors and attorneys to kind of soothe your lack of experience doing this kind of thing or know-how when it comes to negotiating and all the just kind of scary circumstances you can get into, but it's just the all-encompassing way that they make you feel right at home. And I think that's important. That's obviously huge when you're spending a ton of money to get into a dream home and make a huge change in your life. And not only is it going to be just $1,500 to sell your house, but I think you're really going to feel supported. And that's like I said, the most important thing. They really want to get your back every step of the way and make you feel like it's not just about doing it on your own. And you have the people who know how to do it, the people who are looking out for you that aren't trying to make money off of you, like, you know, some realtors can even do. So to learn more about my friends at Homie and take advantage of the real team that they've put together over there, text Homie, that's H-O-M-I-E to 88588. Again, that's Homie, H-O-M-I-E to 88588. All right, I'll move on here with our sixth prospect on our 2019 draft board. And for me, that's Cam Reddish, a guy who I really just wanted to keep higher all throughout the season. And several times when Duke really needed it, he wasn't able to come through. And trying to separate like how much you help your college team with how good of an NBA prospect you're going to be can sometimes be difficult. And I think Duke was such a letdown in the Elite Eight, that might skew how people think. And it doesn't for me, but it's just a matter of how infrequently we saw all the stuff he was supposed to be able to do coming out of high school this year. There's still some exciting flashes. He's a great step-back three-point shooter and a step-back jump shooter in general, but I don't know. I just have a hard time seeing him being a number one scorer and all the stuff he was supposed to be able to do coming out of high school. He just never did it this season.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Actually, I have Reddish at six as well. And for me, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Jason Tatum, but he's a lot worse version of Jason Tatum was in college, in my opinion, just because he's so inconsistent, especially from two-point range. His splits there are pretty egregious, but you hit the nail around the head there, Brent, as far as him being a primary scoring option. He's not a guy I'd waste a top four, top five pick on, because he's a guy just seemed content coasting and kind of being a secondary option, didn't want to take over at all pretty much in any game this year. That worries me. That kind of makes me think he's kind of complacent and maybe just content with being just a secondary option compared to a primary option. If you're going to spend a top five, top six pick on someone, it's going to be a number one option, in my opinion, at least that ceiling. So I think Cam Reddish just really hasn't impressed much at all this year, and that kind of disappoints me, because I feel like I just wonder in my mind, Brent, how he would have been if he was in a role, let's say, like, had his own team on like an Auburn, so to say, how he'd be as a number one option with his own team. I think just interests me a little bit.
Yeah, and maybe we'll get to see that, you know, in his NBA situation. It's just tough. It's tough to feel good about him ever becoming that type of player with how little we saw it in college. But who's your number six?
Number six, actually, for me, is Cam Reddish, too. So okay. We have nothing else to really add on to him there. So number five, we might have the same boards pretty much kind of here, because for me, this is actually really close between five and six and also three and four. So kind of splitting hairs of these four guys coming up here. But for me, number five, DeAndre Hunter, the wing out of Virginia. He got a lot of negative buzz over the past few days because he didn't do well in the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight. But I think he's a guy who kind of gives him more confidence in being an elite role player than Cam Reddish can, as far as meshing in that role. And I know I just said he don't spend a top five, top six player on a role player, but I think with Hunter's wingspan, with Hunter's defense and his instincts, I think he has the upside. I think he has a higher upside to reach a higher ceiling than Cam Reddish does.
I agree. I don't necessarily understand all the complaining about DeAndre Hunter. I feel like for the most part, it's actually surprised me how much he's been the go-to scorer when it gets down to crunch time for Virginia this year. That's not really how they play offense. That's not what his role was last year. And he's really improved, I think, as an isolation scorer. He's not fast. He's not flashy. He's not an incredible athlete as far as explosiveness goes. But I just feel like, you know, he was staying with Carson Edwards in that Elite Eight game out on the perimeter. Edwards was just nailing wild shots. But for the most part, I think Hunter was doing well. And that's a point guard. That's a 6-foot guy who can, you know, pull up and do some crazy stuff off the dribble, and he's staying with him. And I don't know. I just really don't see the negative blowback from those games. And, you know, you saw him, he made a layup, he made a follow, a putback layup, and then got to the line twice. He scored when they needed it in overtime. So he can create shots for himself, and he's a great defender. He's number five for me, but I don't think you're going wrong if you end up with him.
Does he kind of remind you a little bit, just as far as prospects in this class, he's this year's Mikal Bridges?
Yeah, I think that's right. And all of it kind of lines up. Low, perceived to be have a low ceiling, and, you know, not a freshman, guy who comes from a blue blood, deep, talented program. I think that's exactly what it is. And look, we're seeing that with Bridges. I think a lot of teams disregarded him for the same reasons. And those guys keep growing, especially Hunter, who is obviously younger. He's only a sophomore and has a lot of room to grow still. I could see him being an all-star easily.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think Hunter and Bridges, those are just the prototype kind of guys in today's NBA you need on a team. But let's go to number four. And for me, this is actually, I wanted to ask you a question before I go to number four, because I'm really splitting hairs between Jared Culver and RJ Barrett. I don't know who to put four, who to put three. Those guys are super close right now. Where would you land between those two guys? And are those also your three and four?
I balked, and I'm buying into this weekend too much probably, but I have RJ back at number two, which I don't know. I'm probably going to change that or feel dumb about it on June 21st or whatever draft night is. But for right now, I mean, the passes that RJ was making, we'll get there, but, and his improvement as a shooter, he's at number two for me. So I actually have Ja four.
Oh, wow. Okay. I have Ja. Yeah, just go into Ja real quick before you go into mine.
Yeah, I have Ja four just because, I don't know, the more that I think about him, obviously you watch him and you're just sitting there like if you watch him, I could see you walking away and being like, maybe he should be the number one pick. He just does stuff that is crazy. And, you know, he reminds you of Trae Young a little bit in some ways. And we've seen the rookie season he's had as a playmaker, as a creator for teammates. He reminds you a little bit of Trae Young in that he can make just incredible passes in the open court. But, you know, you think about how much of an outlier that performance was against Florida State as a shooter, and just kind of how many questions there are. He never has to play defense. He doesn't even play defense for that team. We don't know anything about how he'll be as a defender. He's super scrawny, can't really shoot that well, and he's not as athletically imposing as a guy like De'Aaron Fox. So you kind of add it all up, and it's like, if he can get into a situation where he's able to play the same game as he does at Murray State, sure. But, you know, the skills you need to succeed as an NBA point guard are just a little bit greater than the benchmark for what you need to be able to do in college. So I'm interested. You know, I don't know how it'll go, but for right now, I have him four.
I think it's interesting, just these top four guys here, Culver, Barrett, Morant, Williamson, they could really go after Zion. They could be ranked between Ja, RJ, and Jarrett any other way. I think just, I've seen so much variance between those three guys after Zion. And I don't blame you going Ja four. I have Ja two. We'll get into in a few minutes for more discussion. But for me at number four, I have Jarrett Culver of Texas Tech, just below RJ Barrett. Super impressed with him in the tournament so far. And I guess I didn't even notice until I looked it up even more this week, but I guess he grew heading into the season at Texas Tech I did not know about. And that's interesting to me that he has maybe a little bit more upside left in him. Maybe he's a 6'9", 6'10" wing over time. I think he's 6'8" right now, but if he keeps growing, if he's like a Giannis situation, then that's kind of interesting to me. But Jared Culver, he can shoot the ball a little bit. I know his percentages don't really show that, but really his form isn't that bad. So I think it's correctable with like an Ewer Koshkov type of player development coach. Also, his defense is translatable to the NBA. When you think about Brent, I've seen so much negatives from RJ Barrett, but I've seen so much positives from Jarrett Culver that they're so close for me. But I'm going to stay with Barrett at number three, but I would not be shocked if Culver blows up the Final Four that I had him at three.
Yeah, Culver's at three for me as well. I think you saw some warning signs from him in these every tournament game, basically, except for his first one, which Northern Kentucky was not good. And especially in crunch time of that Gonzaga game, obviously Texas Tech wins that game, but they were going to him kind of in the high post in isolation, backing down a defender, and he really wasn't able to create anything. And I think that lack of pull-up shooting ability, that lack of self-creation there that you saw, is my biggest question about him. He doesn't have a great first step, not a super explosive athlete. So getting to the basket is a struggle for him, as is finishing when he gets it down there. He has a good handle, especially for his size, and the fact that he's still growing and the coordination that goes with doing that when you're still growing. But, you know, I just wonder if we already have a lot of questions about him as a three-point shooter. He regressed a lot this year, taking some more difficult threes. If the shot is, you know, maybe he's like a slightly below league average three-point shooter at the NBA level and he struggles getting to the basket, I don't know what kind of value that has on offense. So that's my question on him. The Stepien has him at number two right now, and I'm not quite ready to go there, but I also think he's probably the best non-Zion defensive prospect in this class on the perimeter. So, you know, balance that out, and I guess you kind of land at number three.
All righty, guys. Before we go into our top three prospects here, we've gone through 10 through 4 so far for everyone. I want to tell you guys really quickly about our Locked On NBA show. If you haven't already done so, go ahead and give us a subscribe at Locked On NBA. It is one of the more in-depth podcasts out there as far as a national taste of the NBA. Every day we have our hosts, David Locke, Josh Lloyd, Anthony Irwin, Jake Mass, just to name a few of them. Monday through Friday for you guys, bringing you the daily NBA content in a 30-minute bite-sized podcast you guys also love here on Locked On Suns. So if you haven't already done so, go on your Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you find your podcast, subscribe to Locked On NBA.
Want to also tell you guys about the Wyze indoor camera. You heard me talk about it last week, and I guess it kind of goes in with our other sponsor, Homey. But if you are just kind of making your house, upgrading your house, settling in there, there's really no better way to make sure you feel safe and sound at home than the Wyze indoor camera. It's packed with premium features such as a 1080p full HD, night vision, and two-way audio. It allows you to see everything from anywhere for only $20. So this also is going to include a Wyze app that's for your smartphone to check on the home from anywhere. A live stream through that app with 8x digital zoom and a free rolling 14-day cloud storage of that footage for no subscription fee. So you pay to get the camera and you get this app included for free with a 14-day storage to check on everything, even a few weeks back. You can watch your kids. You can check on your pets. You can run out to run an errand and have something in the stove even and be able to check on the heat and make sure nothing's getting out of control there. So just to feel that safety, security when you're away, check out the Wyze indoor camera. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA going to Wyze.com. That's W-Y-Z-E Wyze.com/LOCKEDONNBA to get our guaranteed lowest price for the Wyze indoor camera. Alrighty, let us move on here to number two. We both already said who it is, and everyone knows who our number one is, but I want to hear your RJ takes, because I kind of went on about him this weekend, but what are your thoughts? Why do you have him a little bit lower than me?
Yeah, I have a three just because I think, just the more I think about it, I think Ja Morant, this can just be a discussion between Morant and RJ, because I think we both have him. You have Morant at four, I have Morant at two, but I think that Morant, just his skill set and his explosiveness, just translates better in the NBA. Right now, you see De'Aaron Fox, you see Luka Doncic, Trae Young. All these guards have an early success. I know Fox had a horrible first year, but at least in the first 2 years, those guys translated pretty well. And just from what I saw against Gonzaga the earlier this year for RJ Barrett, and then I saw Michigan State with the game on the line, Brendan, he, instead of passing to a wide open cutting Zion Williamson, drives into three guys, gets a foul call, misses one and one, and the Duke ends up losing the game there. But I think these reads that RJ Barrett just doesn't see for some reason just really worries me. And especially from a Phoenix Suns standpoint, he kind of reminds me of a guy who might kind of clash with Devin Booker a little bit. Maybe he thinks he's kind of the guy and takes the shot in the last minute when Booker is usually the guy that takes it. There's a lot of red flags there. It kind of remind me a little bit of Josh Jackson 2017. And from Josh Jackson 2017 from Kansas to now, I told you this off the air before, but that prospect mold kind of is shying me away from it a little bit because of what's happened so far.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the mindset mentality stuff is probably the biggest knock. And the fact that Barrett just hasn't been a great three-point shooter, you know, he hasn't been able. He takes a lot of them, and he's comfortable taking them off the dribble or off the catch, but they just haven't gone in. No, that's the reality. He was 7 of 20 in the tournament, and it's been trending upward. He had a little bit of a hitch, a little bit of a, you know, awkward hand motion going into his shot that kind of went away over the course of the year. So that makes me feel a little bit better, but still only 67% from the free throw line, 31% from three. Not an efficient player this year by any means. I would just say, as far as the mentality stuff goes, A, that seems to me like probably one of the easiest things you could possibly coach out of a player, right? To a certain degree, that stuff, if you have to end up somewhere where the right guy is in your ear, but that's easy to change more so than, you know, a jumper or, you know, just some guy who just does not understand how to play defense. That stuff to me is much more of a red flag than the mentality of taking a lot of shots on offense. And I think the problems we've seen in the Gonzaga game and now in this Michigan State game in the tournament, to me, that honestly is more of an indictment of Coach K than it is RJ. I feel like he didn't put together an offense really at all around this team. They have no spacing. They don't really run plays. So to me, it's like they got to the end of these close games and it was like, well, what else are we supposed to do besides give the ball to this guy? And that's just kind of what ended up happening now. Could you have just said the same thing of, well, they don't have to run any plays, but if the ball's in Zion's hands as opposed to Barrett's hands, things are probably going to go better? Sure, And that's going to be something that Barrett has to, you know, realize over the course of his career. But I don't know, just kind of the more I watch him, the more I feel like some of that stuff's overblown and the talent's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. Just what you saw, the flashes sometimes this year, and also before he even got the Duke. I know he destroyed the USA basketball team when he was with Team Canada. I think it was 18 months ago at this point. But I'm just looking at the Tankathon standard now, Brandon. He's not fit in Phoenix, I don't think, unless they really got rid of Kelly Oubre and every single wing possible outside Mikal Bridges. But
I mean, I just don't think he fits with Booker, like you were saying. Forget anyone else.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this would be a really bad clash of just styles there. But you look at the lottery here, maybe Cleveland fits for him. Maybe, I think Memphis makes a lot of sense, New Orleans and Washington. But that's only four of the top nine teams who make sense for him. I don't think he makes sense in New York, Chicago, Atlanta, just for the reasons that they already have guys on their team that are high-usage guys. And I think Barrett's going to have to be a high-usage guy from the threat in the league.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think he fits in Chicago at all. I don't think he fits in Phoenix much at all. I like his fit with Colin Sexton a lot. In Memphis, you know, kind of they don't have much talent there, so you could kind of insert anyone and feel okay about it. New York, I mean, if they don't get KD and Kyrie, which I think it's a given they'll get KD at this point, but I don't know about anyone else. So maybe there, you know, if KD's really kind of pulling the LeBron to LA thing and just saying, I'm here no matter what, let's see what we can build, then RJ might make a little bit of sense there. But you're right. I mean, he needs to kind of spread his wings, and there's not a lot of teams that are going to be willing to do that. So it's going to be interesting. But do we have any new thoughts on Zion here? We both have him number one. Is there anything that you feel like you learned? Or, I mean, it kind of seems like since they beat Kentucky the first weekend of the college season, it's just been like, yeah, pretty great player, pretty generational prospect. Is there anything new?
Yeah, the first 5 minutes of that Kentucky game, the first game of the season, you're like, okay, I don't know why people had this guy not ranked number one, just with the sequences he was putting together. And just before I dive into Zion real quick, just to recap, I had Morant 2 and Brennan had RJ Barrett 2, just to remind you guys. We already dove into them a lot. But with Zion Williamson, I'm pulling up his numbers here. So his last 7 games after he returned from that weird shoe explosion he had, or that sprained his knee, or it was a minor sprain of the knee. But it was just crazy numbers he put together. And 27 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks on a 71 true shooting percentage his last 7 games. That is ridiculous.
Yeah, he's incredible. I mean, he shot like 75% from 2 this season overall. Let me see. Yep, 75% from 2. You know, he's the best player on Duke at everything, I think. He's the best playmaker. He's the best scorer. He's the best defensive player by a mile. Just wild how well-rounded his game is, and how much not only is it talent and skill and production, but so much of what he does funnels into winning games. He makes plays that make people better around him, in addition to just being an insane athlete. And I think that kind of duality within him is exactly why he's been getting so many of the LeBron comparisons, whether those are fair or not. I think it's just the combination of athleticism and talent combined with just, you know, he wants to put his team in position to win is a combination we don't see very often. And I think LeBron's the perfect example of it. So I don't think he's a seamless, no doubt about it, fit with DeAndre Ayton. I don't, you know, if they had some struggles in the first couple of years, if Zion ended up here, I wouldn't be blown away. But just because of how much of a team player, I mean, I don't know how a better way to say it. It would be impossible for me to not imagine that they could figure it out.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I just, the more I think about it, I know this might make some Suns fans a little mad that I'm even going to say this. I'm even pretty surprised myself I'm about to say this, but if they had Zion Williamson and DeAndre Ayton together, I think in time, I think you'd have Ayton playing more as a 4 and Zion as a 5, just because of the rim protection ability and Ayton's eventual hopeful ability to stretch the floor. I think he's a better floor stretcher at this point, just how his mechanics are than Zion. But when you see Zion shooting percentages, I mean, maybe in time he's a 35-36% 3-point shooter, but I just don't get, I continue to see some people on some Twitter point out, okay, Zion and Ayton don't fit together, Zion and Booker don't fit together. But what we keep saying on Locked On Suns here is just that Zion Williamson would optimize Devin Booker, optimize DeAndre Ayton, and also help defense big time. And you also think from a character standpoint, from that mentality standpoint, like you mentioned there, Brennan, he's a guy who is all right deferring to RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish at points. So he's definitely fine being a second or third option, at least early on. And it just makes so much sense to check every box, and especially from an off the court standpoint with a marketing and ticket standpoint. So no, ownership might matter about that. That's going to make the Suns a lot of money if they get Zion Williamson number one.
Yeah. Do you understand at all why people don't think he fits with like Booker? Like, I don't understand. He's a four, right? He's going to play the four here. I mean, maybe he can play the five if he, depending on who's around him. And I agree with you. They would kind of be inverting the way that we normally think about big man positions if he were to play with Ayton, but it makes sense still, the skill wise. I'm not even being like, for the sake of my own argument, pretending like I don't understand it. I don't understand why people think he wouldn't fit with Devin Booker. Is that really a thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen it a couple
times. Why would he not? I don't get it. And they don't play the same position. They don't do the same stuff.
Yeah. I guess it's just because what I've seen just on very like Bright Side of the Sun story comments and also on Sun Threads sometimes, just they think that just Zion would take too many shots away from a guy like Booker and also Ayton, just like how that would fit together with those usage guys. But
I don't think Zion's going to shoot much in the NBA. I don't think he's going to be a 20-point a game scorer, at least early on.
Yeah, he's going to be a guy I think he's going to put maybe 15 and 8 and like 2 blocks and 2 steals per game right after shoot. That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I agree. That's really weird to me. I'd seen the Ayton thing and I kind of get that one, but I don't get Booker. I mean, to have a guy in the front court who can be a playmaker for you makes so much stuff easier. It makes point guard an easier calculation. It makes kind of the wing rotation fit together a little bit better. And I don't know. That seems to me like a perfect fit for Booker. But one last question on Zion before we close here. Do you think, if all three guys are in their prime, but hypothetically, he gets to Phoenix, the Suns win the lottery and they draft him, and he's here, the rest of the roster is mostly the same. In 3-4 years when all these guys are kind of in their prime, do you feel like Williamson would be the best player on this team?
Yes. I think that's really easy for me to say.
So then that's the thing, right? Like Suns fans who are worried, it's like, sure, we love what Devin Booker's doing right now, and he's an incredible talent, and this kind of ceiling is yet to be seen for him. But if you're talking about a guy who's going to become the best player on your team, I don't care how he fits with the guys already here. He's going to be the best player on the team. No one was worried about LeBron coming in as a rookie or Anthony Davis coming in as a rookie and thinking, well, how's Zydrunas Ilgauskas going to fit into this? Or what are we going to do about, Eric Gordon? How are we going to make that fit work? It doesn't matter. The guy's going to be incredible, and you figure your team out around him.
Absolutely. That's a really good point you bring up there. And hopefully we don't have this debate. The Suns do the number one pick. But just to tie things up here, just to wrap things up on this podcast, appreciate everyone listening. And as always, just wanted to explain really quickly just to the audience how much Zion and Ayton with those two guys together would help Booker, because you see Booker's averaging 27.7 rebounds, 7 assists on 58 true shooting percentage. If you add Zion Williamson alongside DeAndre Ayton, Booker's going to be unstoppable.
Yeah, the spacing will be easier because you have more playmaking on the court. You have the pace. I think they're going to, if that lineup were to happen, if Zion's here, they're going to play faster. They're going to be turning defense into offense more consistently. That's how Duke was at their best, because Zion created so much of that for them. And I think you'd see something similar no matter where he ends up in the NBA. But that's already what the Suns want to do: get easier buckets, make life easier on Booker. Yeah, I mean, I think ideally we could have seen a little bit more of that if Barrett was the player he should have been this season. He's a pretty similar player to Booker, ideally. It didn't really happen that way. But anyone who watched Duke, just imagine Booker in that system and some better NBA talent around those guys. And to me, that seems perfect for Ayton and Booker.
Absolutely. I think we're both in agreement there. I hope most of the listeners are in agreement there as well, that Zion is the easy choice, number one. The Suns do get the number one overall pick. They are 18-60 right now, 2.5 games behind the New York Knicks with 4 remaining. They're also 3 games ahead of the Chicago Bulls, who have the 4 spot with 4 remaining. So unless the Suns win out here, I think they're in pretty good shape as far as getting the top 3 odds. I think just one more loss secures that. So I appreciate everyone listening in, as always, to Locked On Suns. We'll be back to you guys tomorrow for our next episode.